Hi, welcome to River Talk Podcast. My name is Zach. This is a podcast about river rafting, kayaking, that kind of stuff. A lot of you have heard it, so welcome back to the show. Eric and Priscilla are usually co-hosts. They're off doing their own stuff. They're very busy people. But today, my friend Aaron's a co-host. Welcome back, Aaron.
Yeah, great to be here, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we're going to do an interview with our friend Greg Babikoff. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I don't think I have any news of the week, and I can't think of anything, so we're just going to kind of go into talking to Greg a little bit. And just to give Greg some
Aaron, Zach, if you don't mind, I'll throw a little bit of just talk about snowpack. As of, you know, beginning of February here, our snowpack in California is not looking so good. It's, 60-80%, depending on where you're looking. And Oregon seems to be doing better, though, huh? Like, the snow, the Wahi's got, like, over 110% of normal at this point. And, seems like you guys are doing better up there.
We're doing okay. I think up here in the gorge, we're at like 80-90%, I'm guessing. I don't follow the snowpack that carefully this time of year. But I think we're not doing terrible. And I know Idaho is about the same, like maybe a little bit above average, a little bit below other places.
Yeah.
But,
California isn't looking promising this year. It's looking like it's going to be another minimal water year. So.
Well, you know, what I would say to that is, you know, come boating on the Rogue in Oregon. or the salmon. All you people looking for trips, come visit us in Oregon this year. But there's, you know, as you know, there's a lot of time between now and the boating season. California could end up 200% normal. We could end up in a drought. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen until April even.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, totally.
There's usually a potential for a good storm in March. So fingers crossed. And yeah, I think you're right on. You know, Idaho isn't looking great either as far as the high elevation stuff goes. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, Selway's got 120% normal right now, which is that's good. Yeah. And then, but everything else is, not as high. Somehow it's been getting all the snow.
So. The salmon drainage, I think, was 102 last time I checked, but the Middle Fork was in the high 80s or low 90s. So the Middle Fork is the water's there. You know, to me, as long as the Middle Fork, you know, is above 80% of normal, I'm happy. My goal every year is between 80 and 120%. Somewhere in there, I'm happy. Any higher and have to worry about high water early season, any lower and it gets pretty scrapy in August. But we're in that window right now.
Yeah, so, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yep. Yeah. Well, let's get started. I have this new set of kind of rapid fire questions I want to ask people that row, just to give some perspective. And I'm testing this out on you, Greg, and maybe in future episodes we'll do this more. So I'm just going to get started. This is meant as rapid fire, but if you want to elaborate, you know, please do. And so people have perspective. Greg is a very experienced capoater. I've boated with him a ton. I think you're known for going for it. Like, you'll go into a hole and flip, and you're not afraid to, like, push the limits, and especially when you're training. And you've done some of the really coolest capboating descents here in the Northwest. So you're definitely viewed as one of the top boaters here. I view you that way, at least here in the Northwest. And so I'm just curious what your answers to these are. I'm just going to get started. The first is, do you believe in pins and clips and oarlocks?
I'm not a pins and clips guy. No, I actually row open oars.
Okay. Open oars. And do you tie your boats to your frame? Do you tie your oars to your frame somehow?
I do use oar tethers.
Okay. Cool. Are you more of a cat boat person or a round boat person?
My heart's in cat boating. It always has been with oars, but I also love rafts, and I've had a ton of fun learning rafts and R2ing.
Cool. How about pushing versus pulling on the oars? Do you push more or do you pull more?
Typically, I push more, but that's in the big stuff, the class 5 stuff. I'm more of a pusher than a puller.
Yeah. How about, I feel like you're kind of sponsored or sponsored by a raft brand, so I know the answer to this, but do you have a favorite brand of rafts?
Currently, I have a Moravia. I helped them in changing their design a little bit, and they're a great boat. I've run quite a few different boats out there, so I don't even really know if I have a favorite. I like them all for different reasons. And currently, I have a Moravia.
I think that's like the best answer, actually. I love that answer. How about favorite oars? Do you have a favorite brand of oars? And if there's a brand, is it a favorite style or model?
Again, I mean, I've tested a lot of stuff out there, and I love testing new stuff. Currently, I'm running Prolox. They made a Class 5 model for me, which is extremely rigid with no flex in it at all. And my go-to other than that is Sawyer MSG.
Cool. And, you know, you actually just thought me of a new – I'm an MXG fan too, so thanks for mentioning that. You thought – made me think of a new question to ask is, do you like flex or do you like stiff?
I like it rigid. I'm a point of contact guy. I don't want to wait for that ore to load up before it moves, which, I mean, at that point, if it's too rigid and it's going to rip my arm out of my socket, I'll let go of it. Simple as that. Don't hang on to it if it's going to, you know, do you damage, which, but that's just my two cents. I don't like flex.
Zach, can I ask a question about ores?
Yeah.
What kind of handles do you prefer? Do you prefer like the rounded black handles or like the straight wood handles?
I prefer a new one that's out there called Gilman Grips. And Gilman Grips are Jeff Gilman. I've been running them for about a year now. And they are game changers. They're ergonomically correct to fit your hand left and right. And they're literally game changers. They're awesome. I love them.
That's strong. Those are strong
grips. Oh, yeah. I am fully aware. And yeah, like I said, I've been running them for a while. They're amazing. And especially for an open oars guy, because I don't have oar locks, or I mean, not oar rights. So they give you a point to where you don't even have to look at that oar to know where it is or where the blade is, so to speak.
Do you put your thumbs on the end of them?
I do. I like my thumbs on the end, but they also have a roll under to where you can do a regular grip and they fit underneath. So the way that Jeff designed them is there's a couple of different fits that are just super comfortable, and they'll fit for pins and clips and orrights as well, because it's more of a comfort in your hand than it is the, you know, rolling it around or whatever. That's what I run.
Aaron, have you seen these things?
I just brought them up online, just looked at them right now. Yeah, I was like, I'd never seen them before, never heard of them, but I think I may have seen them actually. How long have they been around? Now that I'm looking at it, I think I may have seen someone with them.
They've been around about a year and a half now. Jeff has been on the R&D with them for a couple of years. He was a Class 5 kayaker, and as he got some injuries, got a little bit older, had to put that on the back burner. And as he started doing more raft trips and Grand Canyon stuff, thought, well, you know, as a kayaker, we've got bent shaft paddles, we've got ergonomically correct, they're, you know, everything's dialed in, and now I put oars in my hand, and there's, you know, you guys still have round handles. What's going on there? So he went to the drawing board, came up with these, and has gone through a couple of different models, and I've got the latest edition, and they're awesome. I love them. Absolutely love them.
Do you know how they do with like UV and just like over the long haul, you know, just getting whaled on?
Yeah, they're going to do exceptionally well. It's got a grade 8 bolt that he starts with, and then it's a gel 2-part epoxy that's over the top of that goes into the mold. And then he's got, you know, just a little bit of shrink wrap or something over the top of him for the grip. So I'm assuming with the materials that he's got in it, that it is going to hold up for the long haul. But they haven't been out that long. He's still kind of testing that out and looking to get them out there more. So if that does become an issue, I'm sure that'll be something that's addressed and overcome.
So I've been hesitant to use these or like them. I've been kicking my feet, and I think it's what we all do. We all kind of, we like what we learned on or we're used to, and change is hard to accept. And so I've been kind of having a hard time accepting these, and hopefully I can try them out someday. My only real thing I don't like about them is that when I set up tarps, I use my oar handles, and the little rings fit over the handles. That's the only objectionable real issue I have with them, other than they're just not the same. So, but that's just doing multi-day trips with tarps. That's not performance-wise, that means nothing.
Oh, see, Zach, I would say my thing is I like having a long handle so I can change my position on the handles to change the width of my push and everything like that. That's the one thing that I like. You can just hold on to the shaft too, but it's, yeah.
I agree with you. I think if I'm guiding multi-day trips, I don't really want these. But Aaron, if you're rowing open oar locks on a cap boat on Class 5.
No, No, yeah, totally. But I'm not going to be rowing open or locks, first of all. And then, so there we go. Like, but I agree with you. Like, if you're rowing open or locks, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think if pins and clips, they might make sense because it's not just the indexing. I feel like I've heard that it's just a very comfortable position for your hand.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I'm sorry to jump in there, Aaron, but you know, even pushing for me, when you're pushing on your oars, it's such a comfortable grip that literally my hands don't even wrap around the oars. It's like an open monkey grip on a bar. And that's how comfortable and a broad. And the way that Jeff described them to me is when you're pushing on something, you want a big flat surface, like doing push-ups on your hand, and you're all the way across your palm and your fingers. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing a pull-up, you can't really hold on to a big giant bar. And so your knuckles are actually, you know, smaller, and the smaller the bar, the tighter the grip you can get for say pull-ups. And so the way that he has them designed is on your pull, it's your knuckles actually can grip and have a smaller surface area so that you have a stronger pull. And the same thing for the push is like I said, my hands, literally my fingers didn't wrap around the oars. It was more of an open monkey grip because it was so comfortable.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, I think if somebody bought them for me and put them on my oars, I'd enjoy using them. At this point, for me to be like, oh, go spend whatever it is, $50-$60, get them shipped, put them on my oars.
$99.95, Zach.
Okay. Whatever it is. Yep. Like I want to try them. So hopefully they magically appear on some oars I can use someday and give them a shot. And if they are game changers, like you say they are, Greg, and then maybe I'll have to get more serious about getting them on my oars.
Well, we'll definitely talk more about that in the future because I've got a set I'd love for you to try out. You're an industry leader as well, and love to hear your feedback on them.
Yeah, I'm one sure. Go ahead, Aaron.
One last question.
We always do this, Aaron. Let me just say, I'm sure I'll like them. For me, it's just a matter of like physically getting them put in my order. Just I'm busy, so sometimes getting things done is hard.
The effort of like switching out the handles is it's a fair amount. I mean,
this is an hour-long process for me to go from ordering them to putting in my oars.
So what about when you're shipping your oars? Do they work well for that too? And you're spinning them around and then you bring them back. Like, do they hold the position you want them to hold, or do they get, I don't know.
For me, I like I said, I run open oars, and so I don't have anything that holds them into position. So when you do ship your oars and I come back to it, I can still be looking where I'm going while I'm clocking that oar into my hand because it only fits in one position.
Yeah.
And until it fits into that perfect position, it's not right. And then it falls into your hand. And once it falls into your hand, that oar blade is just like you've got an oar right in there, and it's right back to where you set it up.
That seems like the big advantage to me. You're shipping your oars. That seems like a huge thing.
And I've even done it surfing stuff before, where you drop an oar, you go sideways into it or something like that, and then you grab a hold of that oar again, and I'm still looking with the one oar that I've got in my hand while I'm clocking the other one, and you're right back into going again without having to look or worry. So it kind of has the benefits of an oar right, but at the same time, you can still run open. And I know I'm a little crazy. Nobody likes that, but I personally do.
Well, I mean, there's people who believe in open or locks for class 5. I'm not one of them, but, you be you. You be you. I think the question you're asking, though, Aaron, is if you're running them on pins and clips, would it be hard to ship yours? And that's something I didn't think of because it might create an awkward handle when you're shipping.
No, and it's a grip that, so it's going to be a comfort in your hands as opposed to just a round grip. And so you're fixed with pins and clips or oar rights. And in that fixed position, to take you out of just the round and go to an ergonomically left and right grip, the comfort is really what sells these grips.
Let me rephrase this. I think so. For me, people have different definitions of shipping, and to me, shipping is when you pull your oar back, and so the blade is forward against the raft, so you can go through a narrow channel or whatever. And so if the oar, when I ship, sometimes I change the grip on the blade. Like if I'm going to go over a huge drop, I'll change the grip to the other side of my handles and hold them from the inside. I'm not sure if that makes sense. So with pins and clips, when I ship, I'll be running these grips backwards. Is that what you're getting at, Aaron?
Kind of, and then that transition back and forth. Like it makes for the open locks, it makes total sense. Like the advantages way outweigh the negative. Like that's one of my biggest complaints about locks is like you're shipping and coming back, and like I would be curious to try them out. But then with, like you said, with like pins and clips or something where it's positioned there, it's a really smooth when you've got that flat piece. You just push your hand around, you just move it around underneath, and it just swings real nice. This seems like you got to ride it up onto the lump and swing it down, then get it back down, and you're just changing your contact more. It'd be difficult to keep your hands on contact on the top as you slide it out, if that makes sense. It seems like you're just looking at it, it wouldn't be as smooth as for me as like when I just like visualize shipping or bringing it back. With like I said, with the like the pins and clips set up, with the locks, with, as Zach likes to say, running spinnies.
Spinnies,
this is the most ideal for spinnies.
And Greg, just so if you know about both Aaron and I are happy running spinnies or orites or pins and clips. Like we have preferences based on certain water. So we're not like you only do this. Like I would certainly enjoy trying running these things with spinnies down the wind or something just to test them out.
Sure.
I'm not like stuck in my pins and clips always. One time actually some people forgot the gear on the wind. And I had to run one pin and clip, one spinny.
Ooh, that'd be challenging.
It was interesting. You could tell the advantages and disadvantages of each really quickly because, you know, the spinny, I would actually use a lot to do getting those like little currents and I'd play around more with. But if I needed a yard, I'd like just yard on the orders, I'd like the pin and clip more. But it was a great way to tell the difference between the two. So I would suggest it to anybody who wants to really like dive into the differences between pins and clips and orlocks. But
and we can talk more about that in the future. And yeah, like I said, I'll get a set in your hand and we can do this again.
Cool. Well, let's just keep going down my list. I have two more things.
Sure.
Next, like what river would you consider your training ground? Like what's your do you have one river you practice the most on?
The wind.
Wind. Cool. Me too. It's mine. I figured that was your answer, but I just want to double check. And then finally, like what suggestions do you have for people who want to transition from like class 3-4 boating to class 4-5? Like what skills or what things do people need to have to make that next jump from like, for example, the upper Clackamas to the wind?
I would say I'm going to quote Val Shaw on this one. And Val Shaw told me a long time ago, there is a big difference between surfing and being surfed. And the way I look at it is if you know how to surf and you start off playing on small waves, you learn basically what the river's doing. You learn what a surf is, and then you start playing around with those surfs. And when you get good at surfing, you look at rivers differently. So if you're going through a class 3 or 4 and you know how to surf, you're no longer looking at the hazards. You're looking for the places that you can go play and surf in. And so it shifts your dynamics of the way that you look at rapids. And then when you get surfed, you're not, oh my God, what's happening to me? It's you're comfortable. You've been there before. You know what's going to come next or could come next. And as you play in smaller waves and gradually start bumping yourself up, I mean, like you said earlier, I've flipped my boat and I've kind of been known for the guy that, you know, goes out and flips his boat. And I always wanted to be in a comfortable situation playing in a hole. And then the boat flips to have muscle memory. So when I do get flipped and I, you know, oh my God, I'm in a scary situation, I'm not overwhelmed. I know what to do next. It's kind of like a live fire operation. You know, you can't go into live fire until you've been fired upon. And at that point, you know what's coming, you know what to do next. You're a little bit more comfortable, even though you're in a live fire situation.
Yeah, and I've seen you flip a handful of times on straightforward rivers, and I appreciate that. Like you're testing your skills out on a place that you feel is safe.
Yep.
Instead of having it happen for the first time in a class 5 because you've done it enough times, and I think that's super smart.
That's
not for everybody.
It's not. And class 4 and 5 isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things is you know, everybody wants to step that kind of stuff up, but they don't know really what they're getting into. And until you're really good at turning a class 3 run into a class 4 plus class 5 run just in the way that you're moving through the rapids. I mean, yeah, it's low water Clackamas, but to take a low water Clackamas and to turn it into a class 4 plus technical run is the kind of stuff that you do before you step up into the next stage of things, I think.
Yeah, and Greg, I think now that's why I asked about training ground too. Like now that the wind is your training ground, I'm guessing there you're also like trying new lines and challenging yourself in new interesting ways there, so you could do the harder stuff. Would you say that's the case?
I absolutely would. The winds taught me a lot, and it continues to teach me a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of really, if you get creative, there's a lot of ways to make those rapids really hard and put yourself in some interesting situations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, cool. I want to go on and talk about your frame business. I mean, beyond being a catboater, you've designed catboat frames and manufactured some through your own business. I think it's BB Boats is what business?
BB Fabrication and Design.
BB Fabrication Design. And I know you have some things coming up. Do you want to talk a little bit about your cat frames and the business and where it's headed?
I would love to. So I started building cat frames. Well, let's go into a little bit of history. I started running cat boats with a small 8-foot fishing cat and proceeded to put that into class 4+ and 4s until I broke it about 5 times, welded it back together, broke it again, welded it back together, and finally, sitting on the Titan with 8 broken welds at the cable crossing, decided, oh my God, we've got to do something different. This is not designed for what I'm doing. So I went back to the drawing board and I created a new cat boat design that was stronger but still ran a very small tube. And the industry thought, you're nuts. There's no way I'm taking that little tiny thing anywhere. And for the next 4 years, I mean, that was the boat that I took down the lower wind with you. And we pushed that one pretty hard. And that was a great boat until I saw the North Fork of the Payette. And when I saw that, I went, oh my God, I need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
So went back to the drawing board, created the frame that I have now, which took me about a year and a half to design, build, and test. And it's phenomenal. And from there, I started BB Fabrication and Design. And BB Fabrication and Design has been around for about 2 years now. We've done a little bit, but not a ton. We've had some problems in getting up and going with manufacturing. And just recently, we have linked up with Class 5 Adventure Gear over in Boise, Idaho, with Jesse Fisher. And the two of us are going to put 2 hats under one roof. We're not a partnership. We are 2 separate companies that are collaborating together to bring better products in a timely manner to the market. And that's where we're at right now. We can get a custom-made frame to any customer within 2 to 4 weeks from the time that we receive a down payment, which in this industry, as you know, is unheard of. There's 1-year wait lists out there. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff that happens. And we're looking to change that. And we're going to get custom stuff available. And we'll have some production line stuff as well. And we're looking to, like I said, get superior products onto the market in a timely manner.
So, and what is, I know Jesse has his own cat frame design and you have your own. Are you guys going to keep doing your own designs? Or are you going to merge them into one?
We're going to keep doing separate designs. So he has got the North Fork frame model. And I haven't got a name for mine yet, but we're going to have different models that are available. And then between the two of us, I'm sure there's going to be some collaboration on some new stuff.
Okay. And so if people want one of these frames, because I know there's a lot of people that want to buy cat frames and it's hard to get it. Like you can get one from Enderest pretty easy. You know, Dusty makes a good frame. You can get one from Dusty. But if you want sort of that like class 5, like tunnel style frame, this, you know, those are really hard to get. And I know people want to get their hands on one. If they want to get yours, can they put a down payment down today and get it in 2 to 4 weeks? Or when does it start?
This is going to start. So actually right now, currently, as we speak, I have my knee elevated up on some couch pillows because I just had surgery a week ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm dealing with that. But within the next 2 weeks, I'm taking a trip over to Idaho and taking my machinery to manufacture my frames to Jesse's shop. And within the next couple of weeks, so by the end of March, we're going to have blueprints will be available to be up and running. And by the end of March, 1st of April, absolutely, we will be able to take half down and have you a frame in 2 to 4 weeks. And that's just my model. Jesse is taking orders right now and can have you one of his North Fork editions in 2 to 4 weeks today. As soon as we get half down, 2 to 4 weeks, you will have your frame.
And so your frame design is being then being so it sounds like Jesse's manufacturing your design.
Word, yes. So he's got the shop set up over there, and like I said, that's the two hats under one roof. And the collaboration cool. is the two of us had a ton of knowledge and experience in the industry. We've both manufactured a great product, and the two of us are looking to collaborate and to help each other. So Jesse has got the manufacturing dialed in, and he's looking to up his sales. I've got the sales dialed in, and I'm looking to up my manufacturing. So between the two of us, we're gonna create a storm.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of need. I mean, your frame's pretty cool. And if you send me a photo, we'll put it up on the website. Sure. It's just it looks cool. It looks to me, it looks like an F-14 almost. It just looks tough.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's a cool looking frame. It definitely like looks like it's built, and it has that big tunnel underneath.
That, what do you mean by tunnel, Zach?
So maybe Greg can explain it.
Tunnel is mainly for clearance. And so as you caterpillar over stuff in a cat boat, you have the ability to put rocks and stuff underneath you. So the lower the bar from the to the water line. So if you've got your water line and then you've got your frame bar, that clearance level is what you can go over without having to go around. And so the tunnel gives you clearance, kind of like a four-wheel drive. You know, you can't take a lowrider down a four-wheel drive road. You've got to have a 4x4. And that lifts your suspension up. It gives you more travel. You're able to go over stuff that you normally could not.
So with a good tunnel frame, you can pontoon a rock that's like almost a foot out of the water.
Yes.
You know, and I think – and I feel like Dave Nissen was the one who turned that – the first his frames are called the Wind River Tunnel Frames. I think he's the one that coined it. And along the wind, a lot of times you want to just like, there's a rock in your way and you can go around it. But if you don't make the move, you want to just go over it. And so it doesn't have that low bar that you'll smack into a rock.
And I believe Dave was the first one that started that. I've talked with Dave quite extensively. He's a good friend of mine. He's helped me out a ton in getting my business up and going. And, you know, Dave was the guy that was doing class five when, you know, before the stuff that we have out there now was around, and he was running an NRS frame and went, you know what, this is not cutting it, and went to the drawing board and basically invented what we have now. So he was the first guy to create a tunnel frame and knew why it had to be a tunnel frame, and was one of those guys that put things where they needed to be because he knew, and it was a necessity by design or design by necessity kind of thing.
Yeah. Aaron, you'd love Dave Nissen. He's a prolific boater. You know, he did early on, did North Fork Pit, did Middle Fork Feather, and did a lot of stuff like that. And he actually has done stuff like the South Fork of the Merced in the catboat, just kind of ridiculously hard runs. They did the Rubicon in catboats.
Mm-hmm. They did. That was him and Will and Mark and Yep,
he's done some. They've done some big, big trips. He hasn't boated as much anymore, but he still boats, and he manufactures a really great frame as well. But to get one of his frames, it's at least a year waiting list.
Oh wow!
You know, it's not his full time thing. So you know, you get on the waiting list, and a year later, he gives you a call.
Yep.
Because he's so behind. And cool. Thanks for doing that, Greg. I think the catboating public needs more frames, and especially well designed ones. So. I'm pretty stoked you guys are going to be doing that. I want to move on to some more just like random questions or thoughts about catboating while I have you here. On the last podcast, I went on a little bit of a rant about letting go of your oars. I feel like I'm seeing more and more people catboating, like rowing into a rapid and either at the entrance or halfway, like letting go of their oars and grabbing their frame. What do you think about that?
I think that's the craziest thing ever. I mean, if you're taking a race car into a corner, do you let go of the steering wheel and hope for the best? Yeah. I'm not gonna. no, I think that's one of the worst things ever, and I've seen it too. I've flipped a boat before, Zach, and literally the only thing that I had a hold of was the oars and climbed the oar back to the frame to get back into the boat. You know, the last thing I'm gonna let go of is my oar. Because that's my last chance of defense. It's, you know, if I let go of them, I'm at the mercy of the river now. And the things that I do, I don't want to be at the mercy of the river. I want to do my best to go where I want to go. And when that doesn't happen, we'll deal with that then. But that's, I'm not going to give it, you know, any more power to make that easier to get me into trouble. And by letting go of the steering wheel, that's essentially what you're doing.
No, but Greg, I think that's where I struggle with open or locks the most is if you get like up on the edge and almost flip, your oar is just going to slide down the oar lock. Where with a pin and clip, the oar will stay in the lock in the pin, to hopefully stay in the pin. Aaron, I know you're laughing at me right now.
No, I'm absolutely not. You've got a very valid point there, and I've done a couple of things to, you know, I run the bungee lines on my oars.
Okay. And, do you run the Mad Catter bungee lines, like the Mad Catter ones?
Do run the Mad Catter bungee lines. Yep, okay. Dave Nissen. I've got actually two sets of them, and it was for exactly what you're talking about. You know, I got into some steep stuff, and the first thing I noticed was, you know, so waterfalls are a little bit different as far as holding on to your oars or letting go of them. And at the lip, I mean, I've catboated a couple of them. I'm going to throw my oars forward. I want the handles by my feet and the blades behind me, because the last thing I want is the blades touching at the bottom of the drop and then hitting or accepting force and moving around. So if the handle's down there, there's nothing to absorb that force, and they're going to stay behind me. Well, before I had the Dave Nissen bungee lines, Mad Catter bungee lines, they do exactly like you said. As soon as I threw those oars forward and we went down onto the drop, gravity set in, and that oar ran the entire length of the oar lock, hit the blade, spun 90 degrees, and popped right out. And the first thing I did when I hit the bottom was look to each side to grab my oars and put them back into the damn oar locks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing, and Aaron, I know you have thoughts about this, so I'm curious what you think first.
Well, I got a question. I'm confused. I thought we were just talking about not letting go of our oars.
Yes.
we were. It's kind of a, yeah.
So wait, didn't we just say we don't let go of our oars, and now we're just talking about letting go of our oars? So,
well,
maybe clarification will be helpful for people to understand, like, what you mean. Yeah.
And it's a fine line, Aaron, and that's a great question. but it's at the point to where, you know, if you're at the lip of a waterfall and gravity is taking over, there's nothing more that you can do with your oars while you're going vertical. You're in, gravity has taken over. There is nothing you can do with that oar. You can't push in air and expect to move that boat anywhere. And at that point, when the boat hits the bottom, what's it going to do? Where's it going to go? How's it going to react? Is it going to knife down in? Is it going to rocket back out? Is it going to, you know, there's a lot of different variables when you get down there to the bottom of the drop. And it's, I mean, like,
I'm with you, Greg. I totally get it. I totally understand. If you're going to run a waterfall, maybe you have to let go of your oars. I get it. But I think the question is, you know, we started this off by saying you shouldn't let go of your oars. If mm-hmm. you're running a rapid where you're forced to let go of your oars, should you be running that rapid? That's the question I have.
Should's a pretty strong word. I actually hate that word personally.
So let's go to this example. You know, one thing I want to talk about is you running Canyon Creek, because I think that's a really impressive feat. But let's talk about Big Kahuna, right?
Mm-hmm.
At Big Kahuna, you're literally floating up to the drop and holding onto your frame.
Yes and no. You're not floating up to it. You're driving up to it as fast as you can to have the best setup going into that. And so
your oars forward and holding onto your frame.
I'm getting a boof stroke with my oars the same way a kayaker does. So
does what's it work?
It does. It's been pretty amazing. So it's kind of like, you know, it's absolutely a boof stroke. So you see kayakers that throw their paddles on the big drops, and then you see them where they tuck down, move their paddle down to where it knifes into the water. But why do you drop your paddle on one drop and not drop your paddle on another drop in a kayaker's perspective going over a waterfall?
Big Kahuna, nobody's dropping their paddle.
No.
Like, this is like 100 footers or like 80 footers. It's a whole different realm.
Sure. So what's the concept behind it? And granted, the mechanics are different, but what's the concept? Why do you do one for this and not for the other?
So let me
That's a great question. Can we mm-hmm. go back to
Aaron?
So okay. Zach, do you remember when we did that trip on the Forks of the Kern way back when, and the guy in a catboat would turn around at every rapid and hold on to his frame?
I did the middle feather with him, and he did the same thing.
Yes, I know. And to me, it's just like, if you're pushing your oars forward and holding on to your frame, like, okay, you don't even really need the oars for that then at that point. It's like you're just barreling off of it out of control. You know, and Greg, this was your point, which I really liked before, was you're like, I want to have control of my destiny. And then at that point, if you're just letting go of your oars, you're like, okay, you know, we'll see what happens. And like, don't get me wrong, you know, like it takes an incredible amount of skill and just a willingness to put yourself with exposure to take some of these huge drops that people are taking. But it seems like a little out of control in a way to me. Like you're like, okay, let go of my oars.
It's very out of control. And I bet you I can count on one hand and maybe even a couple of fingers, the amount of people that have taken cat boats over a waterfall. It is not the best idea out there. I can attest to that.
And so, I mean, that's my point.
95% of the time, it is not going to end well. And if it does, I don't know if I'd bank on it that it's going to end well the next time.
Yes. And that's my point, is that if you have to look over your oars, you probably shouldn't, you should just portage. And I can get like Sunset Falls is a classic example. I have seen so many people. I was there when Dave and Shelley ran it, and I portaged. I'm like, I'm not going to float over that thing. And they both flipped violently.
Yeah.
Is it Sunset? Yeah, Sunset. Which one's the first one? Sunset? So I was like, I'm not going to do that. And they both had violent flips at the bottom. And I've never seen a cat boat. Everyone that tries to run it has the same result. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of a waterfall that there's no skill, and almost everybody gets turned to the top and goes over to angle. I think Big Kahuna, you know, it's a little bit more of a ramp. And so I think it's a little bit more possible than like a vertical lip. But I mean, I'm sure it's not something, Greg, you would like, because it's on the run, you want to do it and it's fun at some point, but like, you're not going to do it five times in a row.
No.
You have to admit it's a crapshoot.
I've done that run twice. I've had my cat boat in there twice, and I've only run Kahuna once. And I would have run it the next time. It wasn't the drop that scared me. It was the conditions. And at that point, it was extremely high water. You're already on a 50-50 that you're going to make it in a cat boat. So now you throw some extreme conditions into it. And I went, you know what? I'm portaging. I'm over this. And we had a great rest of the run, you know, nailed Champagne and Hammering Spot.
Which is impressive. Those are, again, little drops. Like, that's impressive.
Yep. And, but no, it's, and like I said, I mean, it's pretty extreme. And I learned this one years ago, you know, the crazier you get, the smaller the group gets. And there's not a lot of people that are, you know, even interested or like, you did what? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's just me. It's what I do for fun, and it's just what I do for fun.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Greg, how many waterfalls have you run in your life where you've let go of the oars? How many times have you like let go of your oars purposely because you're running a waterfall? How often does that happen?
Pretty much all of them, because you're setting up at the lip and it's like a boof stroke. I mean, once you get that boof stroke, you're set up as much as you can do. There is nothing else that you can do other than correct your body English or your body positioning to what's coming next. And as you're going vertical, and if you're holding on to your oars and the forces that you're going to hit at the bottom, it's got the potential to, you know, move you around and stuff, or, you know, pull your arm out of its socket, or, you know, smack you in the side or something. Personally, I run my oars with a good amount of space in between them, like almost two fists, because when I'm in my catboat seat, if I let go of my oars, those things are going to spin around me. They're not going to touch me as long as I am directly right in the middle of my seat and I'm holding on to my seat. So, you know, we've even done it playing around in that hole in at the bottom of the wind there, Zach, the big surf hole at the finish line. You know, when the boat turns sideways, there's only so long that you can hold onto that oar before you've got to climb up and high side on your boat, or you're going over sideways or trying to turn it around.
I never look on my oars there. When I switch that,
playing around just to, you know,
get something there. And I'll say, I like my thing is like, I have some CAT experience, but no CAT experience over pretty, you know, vertical drops. And I'll say like a wrap is definitely different than a CAT, the way your nose goes in. Your nose goes a lot deeper in a CAT. And I understand what you're saying with like the oars, pushing the handles forward makes sense to me there, because as your nose goes deep, I've had that happen, even not big drops with a CAT where the blade just gets ripped out to the side in a way that doesn't happen with the raft. And so it's a lot different, I feel like, going over the big drops. But surfing in a hole, I always like to hold on to my oars too. I gotta agree with Zach there. It's like I've seen people just get, you know, just get worked by oars because they let go of them and they're not controlling them. They're just these big logs spinning around.
So there's a picture out there, the first time that I ran Canyon Creek, and it was going over Thrasher, which is
that photo's so awesome.
What would you say, Zach? About an 8-foot drop?
It's legit.
Yeah. And the picture that came out of that is both hands are still on the oars. The boat's about to go over, and it's, I mean, almost fully vertical. And it's like, oh, what comes next? Well, we all know what comes next, but I've still got both hands on the oars. My entire intention of that one on that specific drop was to ride it out. It didn't feel like a big enough drop to where I wanted to ship my oars like I do at Husum. I've ran Husum 10 times now. And Husum on the White Salmon.
Out of 10 times on Husum, how many times have you done it successfully?
Five, I think. Five or six. I'm about 50-50.
So I want to try to – I think we're being confusing here. I want to try to sum some of this stuff up the best I can. I would say we all agree when rowing, as a good rule of thumb, you should be holding on your oars. That's rowing. When you let go of your oars, grab your frame – you're at the mercy of the river in a lot of ways. I'd say an exception to that, according to Greg, is that if you're running waterfalls, you shouldn't hold on to your oars. And that makes sense. So like if you're going to run Big Kahuna, or if you think running Sunset's a good idea, you kind of have to let go of your oars maybe. I get that. I think where Greg, you and I probably differ is I'm going to claim you shouldn't run waterfalls and CATs. It's a bad idea because you can't hold on to your oars. And you have no control. And I'm betting you're claiming, no, it's a good idea in some circumstances.
No, it's a terrible idea. You're absolutely 100% right on the money. It's a terrible idea.
Cool. I'm glad you're with me on that. Like, so I think waterfalls and cat boats don't really mix. Like, if you want to run waterfalls, get a raft, get a kayak. My other issue is you're surrounded by metal. So you're going to get tossed on metal. But I think the one thing I really like, Greg, about you is you're willing to go out there and like push some limits. And I really admire you running Canyon Creek. Like I would like to do that as well. I've never done it, but I'm afraid I'll get hurt. And so I'm not willing to take those risks. But I so respect the fact that you're like, I'm going to go do it once or twice. And I think in Big Kahuna, for example, it would be really hard to portage a cat. Like you're going to get there. And I mean, you could do it, but it would be really hard. And I think what you did was you got there. And tell me if I'm wrong here. You're like, I got to run this. If I have to run it, the technique is throw the oars forward, let go, and try to boof it, and hopefully I make it. Does that sound reasonable?
No, it took me a while to get to Canyon Creek. And I'd run it probably, you know, a couple dozen times in a raft until I finally, like 2 years later, got a catboat in there. And the more that I ran it, the more it felt like, you know what, this goes. And so when I got to Kahuna, I was full set. I knew the raft line over it. I knew it was where it was, what it was. And I was like, that's where I'm going. And it was the first time that I'd ever been in there before. And I didn't know how it was going to go. It was probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. But at the same time, sitting in the eddy, making baby steps forward, it's like, well, as long as I'm making baby steps forward, I'm not stopping and this is going to happen. And that's what got me, you know, over that cusp was, you know, I wanted to do it and I knew that I could do it, but at the same time, it was scary as hell and I had no idea what the outcome was going to be.
And what was the outcome?
It flipped. I went for a swim.
Okay. But you didn't hit the smack in the frame with your body, no oar to the head or anything. Like you just flipped and was.
Yeah. It was clean. It was right over. There's actually some video out there of it that's floating around. And yeah, it was, we had the safety set up. It was a very small crew that was in there. And it was, and again, you know, I agree with you 100%. Taking a capboat over waterfall, probably one of the worst ideas ever. Would I do it again? Yes.
So there's like, you basically like, does it matter that you have any skills? I mean, could we put someone like someone who just like, who's willing to take risk and just swim to the top? If we just dropped it at the top of that waterfall and said, okay, here, this is what you do. I mean, how much better of a chance do you have of staying upright in that waterfall than maybe? Because if you're hitting 50%, that sounds like it's just like, it's dumb luck. You're just hucking yourself off there and hoping you come up upright. It's not like, it's, you know, it doesn't sound like it's that skilled. But it's, getting to that point, don't get me wrong, on the river, like sure. You got to run other rapids and I'm not talking about that, but just running the waterfall itself sounds like it's like, I'm not hearing it's something like it's not repeatable.
Let me jump in here, Greg, and I'll let you answer.
Sure.
I think the skill comes in getting the boat to the lip of the drop with the right angle, angular momentum, forward momentum, and position. That's where the skill comes in. Once you're like, if you just float over the drop with the wrong, like with angular momentum, you're gonna really crash and burn.
So it doesn't matter. I mean, you're flipping 50% of the time. I mean, that's like,
well, I think that you're, if you go over it straight with momentum and land straight, that you'll probably hit 60-70%. If you're just gonna bumble down, you're probably at 20%.
It's actually the percentage is in the design of the boat and the way that cat boats hit the bottom. So I know you're laughing,
Aaron, but I can see that. Yeah, I bet that. Yeah.
Well, because a creature cut to be 100%.
Yeah. Well, so the air saber tooth is a cat boat that's a paddle cat that has a thwart in the front and the rear that you can put a frame on. And what I've learned over the years is I actually strap a thwart to the front of my cat boat now when I do a waterfall.
So you're basically turning into a raft.
The concept of it, yes. So you're still, and it's just in that front, and it's where it pencils in. So
yeah, totally.
I think the issue here with cat boats running big drops beyond the your oars could kill you or you could die by hitting your frame with your head. Is that there's two pointy things in the front, mm-hmm. and those two pointy things have to hit the bottom at kind of the same time. If one of them hits, if you're at an angle at all, it's not forgiving. And so your landing is important. Whereas in a round boat, you have one big pointy thing in the front and your angle can be off and it can be forgiving.
Yep. So let me touch on that for a minute, Zach. I remember one of the things that you mentioned years ago is your thoughts and ideas on a raft design with a pointy nose like a Super Puma or the flat based nose like you enjoy running. Yep. And why do you like the flatter nose over the pointy nose?
I like it because if you go over a big drop, you don't have to hit it perfectly right. Where if the pointy nose has, if your raft has a point and you're, again, the same thing, if you're off at a little bit of an angle, it'll start turning to that side. And so the flat nose allows you to go over big drops.
Right. And that's pretty much exactly it. And then you take a cat boat that has two pencils that are going to go straight down until buoyancy, you know, says, hey, we're too deep. We've got too much pressure. Now we're coming back up. If you have a thwart in the front of it, you're basically making it a flat nose instead of a pointy nose. And granted, it's you know, totally different, but the concept is there.
I'm with you 100% about putting the thwart up there. That's a good idea. But I think Aaron's point is you might as well run a raft.
Yeah. What's the advantage of the cat over the raft at that point?
Personal preference.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, you're way better in a raft than you are a cat. But like I said, I'm back to, it's a dumb idea to take a cat boat over a waterfall.
I'd be actually interested in running a raft down Canyon Creek. Mm-hmm. That might make more sense to me because there's not like, what scares me about the cat is there's just so many metal things everywhere.
Yep.
Where you could run a really simple raft frame and pad it.
And then Tim Brink did it. Tim Brink took his raft over Kahuna and styled it. Came out on the bottom.
Yeah. Right side up. He rode a raft good over.
Go. Yep.
Why not R1 it, Zach?
You know, I haven't R1'd enough to have the confidence to go run something hard yet, but I gotta practice that skill more.
Because R1, then you just have your paddle and you're not gonna like You don't have any metal around you. You don't have those huge old logs that are going to just hit you in the head.
I'd rather just kayak. That's R1ing to me. But R1ing is a skill I want to develop this year. But I think I'd like to, I mean, Aaron, if you came out, I'd R2 it with you. It'd be fun to R2 it. I think R2ing is more fun because, you know, R2ing, I think, is fun because you have a friend and you can do fun things. It's annoying because your friends bail. And, you know, I can see the advantage of R1.
Yeah, I don't. The one problem I don't like with R2 is when your friend's way bigger than you, it can hurt when they fall on you.
Oh, yeah?
Are you making fun of me right now?
Not you in particular, but I've R1 with some guys who are a lot bigger than me, and it's like, it's a little scary. Like, you want someone who's about your size, it's a lot nicer, or even smaller than you. It's nice when they're smaller than you, because then when they fall on you, they don't weigh very much. So,
I almost always but with people that are smaller than me, because I'm a big dude, I like it because they have to paddle really hard to maintain, like, to catch up. I don't ever have to paddle at full force.
Yeah.
So I'm not ever having to give it 100%. You know, they have to paddle hard to keep up with my pace. I'm not having to, like, exhaust myself keeping up with somebody bigger than me.
And then you control the angle because you're the stronger paddler. So you have final say on.
And I'm a control freak. I don't like somebody else telling me how to raft. I don't like to follow somebody else's lines. I like to follow my own lines.
Hey, so that's coming back around here. Ray, where do you like to have your seat on and your pins on your cap? Do you like to run forward to center, back? Where do you center what?
I typically, what I found the best is my oar locks are in line with my knees. So when I'm sitting in there and I'm holding on, my elbows are about, well, they're out to the side, but my arms are about flat, you know, kind of the same way you measure ski poles. You flip the cage over and set them down. You know, you want your arms to be perpendicular with the ground. My oar locks are about in line with my knees. And so I reach forward a tiny bit, but not a ton. And I think you get the most power there. So the further you go back towards your body, the less stroke you have because your arms only go so far behind you, and you're actually losing stroke the closer you bring those oars to you, as opposed to being out a little bit. It just seems to fit. It fits.
So on the tube though, sorry, maybe I didn't say it well. On the tube, where do you like to set up? Because that seems to be the big variance, is like where you put your weight on a cat boat. Like you
I run center. Like, yes. Okay. So as far as the frame goes, I like to run center.
Center though? Your lock, your pins, or your body center?
Body.
Okay.
Your body is center because that's where the most weight is being distributed. You're applying force through the oars. But your weight and the way that the boat handles is based on where you are on the boat. And it's kind of like if you're in an R2, if you're slammed up all the way in the front with two people, you've got two people in the front past the center, it's going to lift the ass end up and it's going to handle differently. And the same thing for the back. If you're riding wheelies all the way down the river, you're not going to have as much control. If you're sitting directly in the center of the boat, you're not forwards or backwards, you've got equal distributed weight and you're using as much of the boat as you can without compromising forwards or backwards, so to speak.
So what I've been doing on this, because there's two things, having your weight in the center is nice because the boat you know, pivots around you where the weight is, but having the oars mounted at the center is nice because it pivots better as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been splitting the difference. I've been teaching, have the center be halfway between where your oars are and your body is. It's only a foot difference, right?
And that's a pretty, pretty subtle difference. And that's something I'd like to try. You know, this is just the way that I've been doing it. And, you know, I've found over the years, but, I personally like change. I like trying new things and figuring them out. But again, that's just me.
So Aaron, what's your take?
Well, I was going to say is like, I think I've tried to do is had the pins centered on the boat, and then I put a little bit of weight in the front of my boat to counter my weight, and so to get the boat to sit flat, because you know you're always carrying a little bit of stuff, so I'll put it out towards the front of the boat, and then my boat will sit flat, and then my then I'm pivoting at the center. But Zach, I kind of like your idea. That's a good one too. And like, I think all three of them make sense.
Yeah,
that's a rafting perspective though, because you don't put weight in front of a cat.
What?
That's the rafting perspective though you have, because you're not going to put weight in the front of a cat.
Yeah, no, I do. You carry stuff with you. You just rig it on the side of your tube. Like rigging against the tube on either side. Like I'll rig a, you know, first aid up there and my lunch up there or something else, kind of not all the way at the front, but you know, just front on the sides on the tubes. And that seems to pull me flat again. Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, no, you got what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I absolutely got what you're saying. And to that is I'll adjust my frame forwards or backwards to make sure that the boat's setting correctly. So if I'm putting weight on the back of the boats, I'm sliding my frame forwards a little bit to where it still sits even. If I'm adding a couple of things in the front, I'm sliding it back. And so when I go on multi-day trips and I put a cargo mod in the front or the back, I'm adjusting the frame forwards or backwards to distribute that weight so that I'm still sitting flat.
Yeah, these are all like super smart, subtle differences. So thank you guys for sure. That totally makes sense, Greg. And I think that's like the subtleties to it that people love hearing. So I'm stoked you're passing that on. The way I was talking about having the center be between where you sit and the,
yeah.
And the is a very simple rule of thumb. It's like, hey, here's the basics. There's advantages of being forward. There's advantages of being back. But like, it's a very general rule that I like to follow. But yeah, I mean, there's so much subtlety to it based on your where your weight is, but also the rivers you're running. I know the people that run the North Fork of the Pit a lot, they love sitting in front of center to be super aggressive on the pushing.
A tiny bit, yeah. And then again, you're going to have a little bit more momentum going into the holes to where you've got a little bit more punch. And at that point, you're driving through something harder because you've got some more weight up forward before that force is being applied and you're, you know, sitting on your heels.
Yeah. Well, we've, this has been a cool conversation. I wanted to have one more conversation before we finish up. And Greg, you were on, there's this footage of the Smith River going around right now of a kind of an epic group going down Oregon Hole Gorge. And Greg, you were lead boat for that. And just kind of want to get your thoughts on how that went and some things that went well and some things that didn't go well.
Well, it was a little bit of everything. I thought my lines went pretty good. I felt pretty comfortable in there. And yeah, I was the lead boat that took off from that. We ran into a few other people. In fact, our group was pretty small. We picked up another raft in there, which was the blue raft that followed me down that did extremely well did good also. And
so wait, hold on. Just so I know, you were two separate groups that merged above the blue raft.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
That's interesting.
That's a key point. Yeah, because
so when we got down in there, we picked up, and it wasn't the raft that flipped. It was the blue raft that was directly behind me with Julie Nathy on the guide stick and an R2 in front of her, so it was an R3, and they nailed it. The small high side that had the swim, which is the point in question I believe we're getting to, had a very long swim through there, and they held on to the side of the raft for what I believe was way too long and needed to do something different. And if you're waiting for something to happen in that kind of a situation, if you wait long enough, it's gonna happen. And if you don't do something to change what you're in, whether it's swim hard or let go of the boat or climb on top of it or do something is going to happen. And that's the difference between running class 4 and running class 5, I think. So I think they needed to be more aggressive in doing something other than just hanging on to the boat and waiting for something to present itself that was going to be fortunate for them. Because in those kind of circumstances, usually what's going to happen is something's going to happen, but it's not going to be any better than the situation you're already in. 90% of the time, it's going to be worse.
Yeah.
And so they got lucky, I think. They didn't get beat up too bad, but they absolutely took some bumps and some bruises. And that's my two cents on it. The cat boat that got stuck in there, it was some conditions. Brent is a very experienced rower. Yeah. I've done a ton of stuff with him. And again, it was, you know, that's class 5. You can have plan A in mind, but it doesn't always go that way. And now you're dealing and overcoming with, you know, what just happened. And
yeah, I mean, Brent's a great boater. I just want to second that. And I think you're allowed to make mistakes.
Sure.
And he certainly made a mistake going there, but I think it's the recovery from the mistakes that is key.
Yeah. And it's what you do next. There's a video floating out around there. And in fact, it's pretty much the title of it is, you know, what do you do next when something happens? Mm-hmm. And I snapped an oar in the first drop in initiation and chucked that oar into the water, had my spare out, put it back in, and then went down still in initiation and proceeded to get stuck. It was running about 5.8, I think.
Yeah.
And was in a position, number one, I didn't want to be, but I was there because of the oar that broke. So by the time I got that fixed, now I'm in a bad spot, and now the boat is pinned and stuck, and it was trying to make its way to the bottom of the river. And as I was on the boat, I tried shaking it, I tried jumping on it, I proceeded to climb out of the seat all the way out onto the front of the cap tube, started bouncing on it, got it to kick loose, spun around, and made it back into the seat. And that was the end of that. But again, it's what do you do when something happens? Do you sit around and wait for something to happen, or do you aggressively make something happen? And I think that's the difference between class four and class five is if you wait for something to happen, it's going to happen and it's going to be bad.
I mean, my take, and there, I want you to pipe in, because I'm curious what you saw the video. I just want to say, like, my take is in class five boating, you're allowed to make mistakes. But the key to it is how you respond to that mistake and how your team helps you respond to that mistake. And so when there's no team to save you and you aren't active in your own rescue, to me, that's a problem. Aaron, I'm curious what you think.
Well, I think going back to earlier when Greg was talking about flipping in, you know, easy on easy runs and just messing around with his boat and trying to make stuff happen there. You know, like you, those people would have, they've probably been a lot better off if they flipped their boat a lot of different places and knew they could get back on their boat. You know, like just messing around and surfing in holes that you probably shouldn't paddle into, but in spots with a clean run out. Because the problem with, you know, that section, it just goes one into the other, into another, just keeps going down. And, you know, Zach and I think we've had conversations about this. To be a class four boater, you need to be able to self-rescue. You need to be able to get on top of your boat and flip it back over. And, like, they were making no effort to do that. They didn't have a line on top on the bottom of the boat. They didn't have an easy way to get up on there. It wasn't rigged for them to flip it back over in the current. And, you know, those are disappointing things to see. And, you know, luckily it wasn't worse, but and so I feel like that in my mind, that's the basic rules is, and you need to train. If you're going to run class four and class five, you need to train in class three and be like, hey, what's the worst things that are going to happen? Am I prepared to handle these? Am I prepared to handle a boat that flips? And what does that entail and what do I need to be able to do? And if you can't, you really should be out there.
I think you're pretty much spot on, Aaron. And like I said, that's why I took my boat into runs that I was comfortable with. And like you said, paddled into a hole that you probably shouldn't be in and have avoided for quite some time. But it's got a clean run out. It's an easy swim. And let's see how this is going to go. And you're probably going to swim. But that's why you're going into it in the first place, is to up your game, to get out of your comfort zone, to know you want to up your game. You better up your game.
And so, Greg, I my take too is you were a lead boat. And so when you're a lead boat, typically you want to put the best boater in the lead, because if that person flips, there's not any downstream safety for them. And if you had flipped, I feel like you could have reflipped before hole in the wall. So then, you know, you would, in that flat water, if you'd flipped a cat, you'd have the presence of mind to jump on that boat, flip it back over, and be ready to run the next rapid.
You're damn right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing.
That's what happened when I swam Jacob's Ladder on the North Fork Payette.
Next rapid hole in the wall, this is a big deal to me, this conversation, because that next rapid hole in the wall, it had the left side has an undercut wall. I don't know if anybody's ever had troubles in the undercut wall, but it definitely is undercut somewhat. And there's a sieve on the right there that I bet if you asked everybody on that trip, nobody was aware there's a sieve on the right and undercut wall on the left. And so when I see somebody swim there, I'm just like, holy, that is not good.
I didn't know about the undercut on the left, but I did see the sieve on the right. And at the levels that we were at, it was just underwater, but there was a giant fin rock there throwing water that told me, you got to be left of that. And if you're on the right of that, that's a bad spot. And we're going left here. And it was just the feature that told me you're not going there. Yeah. And that I believe was the sieve on the right. But it was underwater, but it was enough underwater to what was throwing water in the air that said, that's a bad spot.
So, and the other thing I feel like, and there are not to follow up is like, I feel like there should have been a boat in that eddy ready to help them. And I don't know if there was a boat there, but there should, like in good boating, you know, people are looking back, checking on people. And then if they saw a flip, they should have eddied out and been there to assist with the rescue. And there wasn't good safety for them. But maybe that was part of the issue, is there were two groups merging and there wasn't like clear communication or like clear, you know, it wasn't a clear boat group. It was a bunch of individuals.
It was. And the raft that swam was in our group, and it was me, Brent, another cat boat, and the small mini max. And that was it. The guys that got the video of Brent being stuck in there and actually helped him get out, because I believe he'd still be there if it hadn't been for them. they were a separate group. The raft that was behind me, we bumped into them in the gorge. They were in a separate group, and they're like, hey, you know, why don't you go ahead and take lead and we'll follow you. And, you know, then the, you know, stuff started happening. So there was some communication, absolutely could have been better. That's the one thing that I take away from it. The communication could have been a lot better as far as, you know, what everybody's going to do, the order, the placement, where we're going to, you know, go. Is everybody comfortable? Is, you know, and there was a lot of that stuff that they got taken for granted and overlooked. That's what I take away from that. And, you know, what we've already talked about is, you know, they needed to be more comfortable with what could have happened, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Aaron? Anything to add, Aaron? I think you're on brother.
Yeah, Greg. Greg hit on most of it. I think going back to it is like when you're running hard rivers too, or you're doing anything challenging, you know, it's key to be with your team and key to know the people you're working with. And that, I think that was like great. That was one of the big problems there. It's like they had boated together and they just hopped together to run this big, huge rapid. And that's, you know, like that's sort of for disaster. It's kind of like the all-star team versus a team that plays together all the time. The all-star team doesn't do as well as a team that just plays together. So maybe the boaters are better, but it's still not, you know, it's not necessarily going to be a better team because they haven't worked together. And I see that, you know, like working high water commercial trips, like, oh, we can bring in this really good guide. And it's just like, yeah, that can work. But a lot of times you're better off having a group of people who know to work together. They know their roles. They know how they're going to handle stuff. And they've communicated and talked about stuff a lot over the years, because then you don't have those assumptions about certain things going to happen or isn't going to happen. Which they're, you know, maybe they were expecting someone to be in that eddy and they were flowing down and expected to see someone. They're like, oh crap, there's no one in the eddy to help us. And you know, and so you just don't know when you haven't voted a lot with people what to expect out of each other.
Yep, I'm with you on that one, Aaron. Well, let's finish up. We kind of beat this to death, and this has been a cool conversation. So Aaron and Greg, thank you for keeping this conversation going. It's pretty interesting to me. We like to finish every episode with gear of the week. And Aaron, Greg, do you guys have any gear of the week?
I would like to jump onto that one. So would like to emphasize the Gilman grips. We talked about those a little bit. Cool. And the other one is Prolock Oars. So Prolock Oars is a carbon fiber company that is producing oars now. And they made a set for me that are their Class 5 model. And I told them, because my personal experience and what I like is a rigid oar. I don't want any give in it whatsoever. I want point of contact movement. I don't want to wait for something to load up or unload to, you know, save my shoulder from being pulled out of its socket. If it's going to be pulled out of its socket, I'm going to let go of the oar at that point. But so these Prolocks, he's been working with me for a little bit. I've been running them. I've been testing them for just under a year now. Haven't broke anything yet in the things that I enjoy doing. And it's a pretty solid lightweight rowing system that is strong. And he's got a couple of different models out there. He's got an OG, which is for the class 4 stuff. He's got the class 5 model, which he made me, which is extremely rigid, no giving it whatsoever. Sweet. And then he's got a Power Flex, which is kind of an in-between. So you've got a stronger than your OG model, but it's got a little bit of give from your Class 5 model. And they're phenomenal. They're lightweight. I think the women in the sport are going to absolutely love this. And that's one of the things I'm looking to
Wait,
do.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying women are not as strong as men?
No, Zach, I'm not going to say that. Why are you stirring things up? No, I'm saying that women have used what they can, what's out there. Nothing's been made specifically for them. They have used what is out there and they've improvised, adapt, and overcame to make it work. And if there's stuff out there that is going to make it even easier for them, we're going to see some phenomenal athletes and women coming out, because now they're not overcoming or improvising or adapting. It's actually better. It fits. It's like trying to drive a race car, but you can't reach the pedals, and so you put blocks on your feet. And yeah, you're a great driver, but what happens if we move the seat up and you can actually reach the pedals? How good of a driver are you going to be then?
So cool, yeah, hopefully sometime I can try those out with the Gilman grips. I'm excited to try it out sometime.
Be happy to. I might even have to get you a set, because like I said, I'm going to be down and out for a couple of more weeks in rehab, so... We'll talk some more when this is over, and we'll figure something out.
You know, I'm in rehab too still, so my first boating will be the Wind River Festival from my injury. So hopefully for that.
Cool. Well, we'll like I said, we'll talk some more, and yeah, best of luck on your recovery as well.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. You got anything?
Yeah, I'm just gonna say the good old standard straw hat. You know, everyone's into all these great materials these days. And the good straw hat is fantastic for summer boating. You know, it keeps you cool, protects you from the sun. You can dip in the water, get it all soaking wet. And then if it rains, it kind of protects you from the rain. And it's kind of funny. We have all these new great materials, and I think none of them really are as good as just the standard straw hat. So, yeah, I'm a fan.
Well, nice, Mike, you're the... Love it.
Yeah, right? I mean... Straw hats, man. Why are we we're trying to make something better, you know, than it isn't better.
Well, because you can't buy a straw hat on Amazon or NRS. You have to go to Salmon, Idaho to the guy to get them made. So not everybody has access to the hat guy in Salmon.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually order straw hats online too, Zach. You can.
Okay.
But they're not as good as Jack's and Salmon, that's for sure. But
if you send me a link to where you can order them online, I'll put them on the website.
All right, cool, we'll do.
And so my gear of the week is the Sterling Auto Block Prusik. I just feel, for those of you that carry safety gear, which you probably should, that in this era, like, you should buy a pre-sewn Prusik instead of tying a double fisherman's in cord. And they're very well made, easy to use. And if you're out there and want to replace your old Prusiks with something great, check out the Sterling Auto Blocks. And yeah, that's an episode, guys. Thanks for joining. And it's been a pleasure talking to each of you.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Oh, this river's looking fine. Gonna float me into a new state.